Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. Later in the show, we'll discuss the recent global summit on plastic pollution, which was held in Geneva, Switzerland. But first, we're discussing the newly released U.S. State Department report on international human rights. The report was published after months of delay because of internal disagreements over its content, according to reports. Earlier this year, NPR obtained an internal State Department memo instructing employees editing the reports to remove whole categories of violations not explicitly required by statute, including gender-based violence and environmental justice. They were told to remove roughly two-thirds of the content in what officials call an effort to conform to Trump administration policies and make the reports, quote, more readable. Josh Paul, a former State Department official who resigned over his objection to continued U.S. arms sales to Israel, said the report demonstrates what happens when political agendas take priority over the facts. The outcome is a much abbreviated product that is more reflective of Soviet propaganda. An analysis by Inside Climate News shows that mentions of corruption, which often go hand in hand with environmental degradation, are down by around 80% in the new reports from the prior eight-year average. Mentions of indigenous were down 84% from the prior eight-year average, with sections addressing alleged abuses against indigenous peoples entirely removed from the reports. Mary Lawler, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Human Rights Defenders, said she was appalled that the State Department appeared to scale back reporting on attacks and killings of environmental human rights defenders. She says more than 320 human rights defenders were killed just last year. The majority were focused on environmental protections. Joining us to talk about the report is Katie Surma, a reporter at Inside Climate News, a Pulitzer Prize-winning nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization dedicated to covering climate change, energy, and the environment. Katie Surma's reporting focuses on international environmental law, human rights, and environmental justice. And Katie and her colleague Peter Althaus wrote a piece called U.S. Gets Criticism of Indigenous Rights Abuses, Mentions of Climate Change from Annual Human Rights Reports. Hi, Katie. Thanks for your work, and thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. Before we talk about the content and what is missing from this report, can you just give us an overview of this report and why it matters?
Sure thing. Yeah, so these reports have been congressionally mandated every year since the 1970s. And the original purpose was to help guide lawmakers' decision-making on trade and aid, the underlying idea being U.S. taxpayers shouldn't be funding governments that are committing grave human rights abuses. But since then, the reports have become foundational for immigration judges making decisions about asylum claims, businesses making decisions about where to invest, and advocates and other people use them as well. And so they've really become this key and widely seen as the most authoritative, comprehensive source on the state of human rights around the world. And, you know, now after, you know, this year's reports have come out, you know, they're a third of the size of what they were, that perception has changed.
In The Atlantic, Anne Applebaum wrote that her government sources said State Department human rights experts completed the reports in January in time for their usual publication in March or April. But then Trump ideologues spent the next 6 months customizing them to his peculiar agenda. What else can you tell us about what went on behind the scenes?
Yeah, we also had sources tell us the same thing, that, you know, typically these reports are completed in December, then they're released around April. And, you know, Peter and I had been looking at this for a while because we thought we want to analyze these reports, given what the Trump administration has done to USAID and you know, sort of dismantling parts of the State Department that deal with human rights. And we sent requests into the State Department periodically about what, you know, when these were coming out, and just kept getting no comment. And so, we don't, I don't, can't speak to, what was going on over those months other than to say what the end result has been. But the sources that we spoke to confirmed that, sections on indigenous rights, sections on, minorities and other marginalized groups had been in when the report drafts were completed in December.
It's devastating to think that just last year, more than 320 human rights defenders were killed. This just happens year after year. How do these reports, before this redacted report, how have past reports affected human rights defenders and environmental defenders on the ground?
Well, the biggest thing is that it legitimizes their work. I mean, environmental defenders in particular operate in some, of the most remote environments, remote places. They don't have government support. They're going up against extremely powerful industries, extractive industries, mining, agriculture, oil, gas. And, one of the tactics of those interests, extractive interests, is to delegitimize environmental defenders, to characterize them as criminal in some way. And these human rights reports, legitimize this work. I mean, an environmental defender is someone who peacefully acts to protect their territory. I mean, there's a myriad of other ways. Lawyers will draw on these reports when bringing lawsuits, against companies that may have links to a death or an attack on an environmental defender. So losing this source sort of has cascading impacts through justice systems.
According to The Guardian, more than a third of the killings took place in Colombia last year. They cited a report by NGO Global Witness. Brazil, Mexico, and Honduras were also the most deadly countries for people trying to protect their lands, making up more than 70% of all recorded killings globally. You quoted Edson Krenak, advocacy coordinator with the indigenous rights group Cultural Survival. And Edson said in a statement that the new reports undermine Indigenous people's struggles for sovereignty and justice. This erasure is especially troubling given the well-documented role of U.S. corporations in driving Indigenous people's land dispossession, environmental destruction, and human rights violations through extractive industries and opaque global supply chains. I think this is such an important point because the Trump administration is all about oil, gas, coal, and extraction. So, are you expecting, based on what you've read and the reporting that you've done, that this kind of extracting of resources is just going to increase over the next 4 years?
It sure seems that way. I mean, there is a myriad of sort of narratives being pushed by the Trump administration that are trying to sort of rewrite the basis of facts around extractive industries. I mean, one of them is just removing information about human rights abuses that are linked to environmental conflict and crimes. The other is getting rid of information about climate change and pollution. And that, if you don't know about it, people can't act, right? They have to know before they can act. I mean, just yesterday I read a editorial in the Wall Street Journal that claimed without evidence that there is no scientific evidence to support links between climate change and health impacts. This is an editor of a major newspaper making a serious assertion without one shred of evidence backing up her claim, and that claim echoes what we're hearing from the Trump administration. Just safe to say there's reams of peer-reviewed studies that link climate impacts like drought and intense storms to human health impacts. I think addressing this misinformation head on is something really important that, reporters, journalists have to kind of fill the gap now, of what the US government used to do.
And we're going to talk about the emission of climate change in a minute, but why don't we focus specifically on a clear example here? You write that the report for 2023 on Honduras, released by the Biden administration, said that violence against indigenous peoples and other environmental defenders was often rooted in a broader context of conflict regarding land and natural resources, corruption, lack of transparency, and community consultation, and other criminal activity. Inside Climate News's analysis found mentions of corruption are down around 80% in this new Trump administration report. And environmental defenders, particularly indigenous people, operate in remote areas with little government support. The State Department reports previously drew attention to abuses those groups face. And then now you've got this Trump report, which omits this and also says the left-wing Brazilian government now in charge has disproportionately suppressed the speech of Jair Bolsonaro supporters. So this is just a massive swing in the other direction.
Yeah, I thought Brazil was a pretty stark example comparing last year's reports to this year's reports, especially because, you know, indigenous people in Brazil, they face some horrific attacks, both in their role as environmental defenders, but just, you know, to live their lives, to maintain their culture. And the fact that, you know, the reports this year made no mention of that, it just speaks volumes. But the, you know, the focus on the human rights of Jair Bolsonaro, Brazil's former president, who was a political ally of Trump, you know, speaks to this larger pivot of the reports really increasing criticism of countries that are perceived, enemies of the Trump administration, while pulling back criticism of countries that are perceived allies. So El Salvador, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and others. And, you know, until now, the reports were seen as sort of a non-political, bureaucratic, like they served a higher purpose. But, you know, the sources that we spoke to said that now, you know, the reports are going to be seen as political and carry less weight for that reason.
You quoted Kirk Herbertson, U.S. Director of Advocacy at Earth Rights International. And he said that this can all upend the political and social order. I think when you step back, Katie, it's so, in some ways, easy to forget just how much power the United States has in other countries. So can you talk more about what else you heard from people, just about how those on the ground, especially in places where they're getting killed, how they will be affected by all of this?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Just some, I mean, personal experience, my reporting, I'm on the ground in South America, more recently in Africa. And, you know, one of my sources was killed. He's an environmental defender, Edward Mandua, in Ecuador, was fighting oil expansion on indigenous Kofan land. And he was shot by assassins in his garden in front of his wife and left behind, you know, children, family, and, you know, his loss ripples. This happened in 2023. There are people all over the world who are impacted, have their rights violated. And there's a certain validation or being seen, being acknowledged when they are, you know, these types of abuses are surfaced in a report like the State Department human rights reports. That is gone. When I talked on a recent reporting trip in Africa, in Zambia and Zimbabwe, hearing from people who feel like there is no standard bearer in the world for human rights, for these ideas anymore. they're sort of sandwiched between two competing superpowers, the United States and China. And, China's position on human rights is we do not interfere with other countries' internal affairs. And, human rights experts say there's a strategic reason for that. China does not want people looking at its own human rights record in its own country. I've had sources tell me that the US is, it seems like it's moving in that direction. So who fills that gap? I mean, who stands up for human rights? Wasn't that we maybe take for granted that we have this international human rights system. Until 1945, this didn't exist. Governments could do what they wanted with their citizens. There was no check. And we, the system we have isn't perfect, but it does provide accountability. And the US was always a standard bearer of that. So the big question now is just, who now will take that up?
Well, that is the question. What have you heard from people you've interviewed about who might step in or who can step in?
I mean, people are looking to Europe, of course. That is the most common answer that I get. But there's also, there's networking. There's like this burgeoning movement among civil society where you see these grassroots movements coordinating and connecting across borders. I find that really interesting. But of course, for this, the traditional system of human rights checks, I think it's Europe is where people are looking to.
Katie Surma is a reporter with Inside Climate News, a Pulitzer Prize-winning nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization dedicated to covering climate change, energy, and the environment. And today we're talking about a newly released U.S. State Department report on international human rights. An analysis by Inside Climate News shows that mentions of corruption were down by about 80% from the prior 8-year average. Mentions of indigenous were down 84%. And then mentions of women down 75%, gender down 96%, LGBT down by more than 99.9%. What about the phrase climate change? As you write, while the phrase climate change was never a dominant theme in the State Department's human rights reports, it did appear four times in the year 2023 in discussions on wildfires in Algeria, drought and the movement of livestock for grazing in Chad, internal displacement of people in Guatemala, and threats made against activists who raised the issue in Iraq. But this report, under Trump, climate change doesn't get a mention. And you write, the omission is evidence of a widening gap between the United States and the rest of the world, as well as with the scientific community, on how climate change is impacting human rights.
I mean, the US, has always been an outlier in acknowledging the links between climate change and human rights. And I think that's true even under the Biden administration, though they were moving in that direction, hence the four references in last year's, reports, four references to climate change. And the reason for that is, the US is the world's biggest historical emitter of greenhouse gases. We've also destroyed and degraded large swaths of our country as we've industrialized, and our companies have gone all over the world to extract other countries' resources. So acknowledging, those links between climate change, the environment, and human rights can carry legal consequences potentially for the US government. But, outside of the US, more than 150 countries have recognized the human right to a healthy environment. We now, just in the past year, have had three international courts hand down landmark opinions saying governments have legal obligations to address climate change, and that's largely based on their human rights obligations. There is a huge gap between the US's official position on these issues and the rest of the world. And I think, these what we found with the State Department reports just puts an exclamation point on that.
I also just want to ask you, we have just a couple minutes left. You have another article out that is pretty incredible, and I'm wondering if you can just tell us a bit about this. The woman holding Chinese mining giants accountable. While all of this is happening, the State Department report and people being killed for defending their land. Can you tell us about this incredible piece you wrote about this lawyer in China who's holding companies accountable?
Yeah, sure. And thank you for asking about that. We just published that yesterday. I traveled to Zambia with a lawyer named Jingjing Zhang earlier this year. She's from China. She's a Chinese citizen. She lives in the United States now. And she, grew up as a lawyer litigating against Chinese companies that were polluting in China. And then, as China started going abroad with its Belt and Road Initiative, she followed and she found that these same companies were now kind of exporting these sloppy practices to poor nations. And we were looking at a tailings dam collapse. So, a Chinese copper mine stored all of its toxic waste in this pool called a tailings dam, and it burst in February and just spewed into communities and rivers. And so Jing Jing is working with local lawyers to, hold the company, the company that operated the mine accountable. And I told her story along the way. She's a really, really interesting, brave figure, and doing some critical work.
Yeah, it's really an incredible story. We'd love to have you back to talk more about it. Final thoughts, Katie, given the work you do, I mean, you've written so many important stories. I'll just mention a couple of these. Earth's wetlands are disappearing, and global efforts to save them are unraveling. Humans are wiping out water bodies that life depends on, according to a new report. I mean, it's just. This is just devastating news. It's really heavy. This is happening right before our very eyes. So much devastation has happened since the 70s. And I just wonder, under the Trump administration, given that they are, I mean, they're just smashing renewable technologies, whether it's wind farms or solar, and they're going full on for oil, gas, and coal. What do you hear from people that you interview about what's to come in the next 4 years?
A lot of my sources, because I do international reporting, are in places like the Amazon, South America or Africa or Southeast Asia, and a lot of them aren't looking to governments anymore. They are looking to advanced grassroots solutions. I mentioned these coalitions being formed across countries, and a lot of amazing stuff is happening at the local level all around the world. You have communities doing things like regenerative agriculture, building food forests. I mean, like tons and tons of solutions. One of my sources said, if you add up all of these solutions, these small solutions, they actually are the solution. So it's a hopeful part of, I think, my job, my reporting beat is getting to tell those stories too, because they are quite encouraging.
Yes, and I think it's so important because you do incredible work, and we would love to have you back to talk more about the piece you wrote about the woman holding Chinese mining giants accountable, and then some of these other incredible stories about grassroots activism. Because, as you know, Katie, a lot of people in the US are just wondering, what can I do? And it's inspiring to learn about what's happening in other parts of the world. So we'd love to have you back to talk about these pieces. Katie Surma is a reporter at Inside Climate News, a Pulitzer Prize-winning nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization dedicated to covering climate change, energy, and the environment. And you can find her work at klw.org. Click news in your call, also at insideclimatenews.org. Thank you so much for your work, Katie, and thank you for joining us, and we'd love to have you back.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. And coming up on Your Calls One Planet, we will talk about how the petrochemical lobby influenced the recent UN Plastics Summit. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.